This is HeartWise, offering practical tips and time-proven guidelines to make your life healthier, happier, and more fulfilling. Today you'll learn simple Bible-based principles for building and maintaining optimum mental and physical health, all while deepening your relationship with your Creator. I'm your HeartWise host, Charles Mills. There is an organization in Washington, D.C. whose sole purpose is to make us and our entire planet healthier than we are. They do this by providing education and information, writing books and doing radio programs such as this one, and if necessary, taking the entire government to court. I'm talking about the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, better known as PCRM, and we've had many of their movers and shakers on this show before. Our guest today is involved in the legal area of global health building, and he's agreed to talk with us about some of the recent cases his organization is facing. Mark Kennedy is Vice President for Legal Affairs at PCRM. Mark, welcome to HeartWise.
Thank you for having me.
Now, one of the headlines on your website reads, quote, "Doctors sue government for hiding animal welfare data," end quote. What's that all about and how can it affect our health?
You may be familiar with our organization's two missions. One is, of course, promoting a plant-based diet as a means of preventive medicine.
Right.
And then the other is to encourage human-relevant research. Hmm. And so as part of our work in the human-relevant research area, we pay a lot of attention to the use of animals in the research setting, and we try to discourage that and encourage institutions and research facilities to work towards human-relevant research, which doesn't involve animals. And so one of our primary tools in that effort has been the USDA's Animal Welfare Database. And this was a database that the government posted online, and it included things about the government's inspections of research facilities and information on how the animals were used or treated. And this is all under something called the Animal Welfare Act, which is a law that Congress passed in 1966. And it's really the only law that relates to animals used in the research setting.
Mm-hmm.
There's a law that I'm sure you've heard of called the Freedom of Information Act.
Oh, yes.
And sort of the classic use of that law is for concerned citizens to write a letter to their federal agency of choice and say, please provide the following information for me, and the government must provide that within a certain amount of days. We had been using documents on the USDA's eFOIA reading room site for years, and they related to the inspection of research facilities. They related to a list of licensed research facilities, enforcement actions, and a whole other pack of information, including these annual reports that research facilities have to file to USDA about their use of animals. And everything was proceeding along normally until Friday, February 3rd, when this comprehensive database that we and many other organizations use just disappeared.
Hmm.
Just whoop, went right away. And that's not to say that the electronic reading room went away. It was just this particular database. So we sued.
Now, I would assume that with this type of transparency in place, the USDA has to really watch what they do, and any missteps would be just broadcast for the whole world to see. Am I right in saying that?
They do. I mean, really, the database was wonderful for a lot of reasons. Anyone who monitored research or research trends,
yes,
or the
yes.
use of animals in research, or who was concerned about animal cruelty, sometimes, you know, these records provided information on all of those fronts. And for us, it had been really helpful because we would take that information, sort of analyze what was happening at a research facility, and we could use it to assist in our campaigns. Because
right,
what happens
right.
is, of course, this is a huge repository of data, but, you know, the average person isn't looking at it.
Right.
We could go through, pull the inspection reports, review them, and say, hey, this is a research facility that has a lot of problems, consistent problems in the following regards, and somebody has to step in and do that. And sometimes we would ask USDA to take a closer look while inspecting those facilities, and then other times we would share them with the media, local journalists. And in the case of some of the research that was talked about in our latest issue of Good Medicine, which you saw,
yeah.
you know, we were talking about research conducted at public or very well-known research facilities, Harvard, University of Virginia, NASA, especially federally funded research. I mean, if you're going to spend taxpayer dollars on research, you should do it right,
yes.
Which is, you know, spend that money on human-relevant research. Don't waste it on mistreating animals when we know that the results in animals don't even transfer to humans.
That's an interesting point, and it's been said before by people from PCRM and other places that this animal research really, like you say, does not translate horizontally over to human research. How did you come to realize that? How did you learn that?
It's a little complicated for me because I approach everything from the legal standpoint, but there is a whole process that, like, if we're just talking about drugs, for instance,
right.
The drugs have to go through. And traditionally, people would test the effects of a drug in an animal, and they would go through a couple stages of that, and then they would introduce it to humans in a clinical phase, and then they would submit this gigantic package to FDA, and then FDA would perhaps, or not, allow the drug to reach the general public.
Mm-hmm.
And through that process, of course, what everybody would find is that a drug that performed miraculously in a mouse might do nothing in a monkey or the other way around. And so the drug companies would sort of selectively find the animal it worked in and then move to the next phase, which was humans. And when you get to the human phase, it just drops significantly, so that our calculation of the statistics, and this is pretty well known, show that between 92% and 96% of the drugs that are effective in animals don't have that effect in humans.
Mm-hmm.
And so the whole part of testing animals, you know, just subjecting all these animals to immense pain and suffering for really no reason is, well, for no reason. It's basically pointless.
In other words, the drug company really should put on the label, if you have a bad headache and you happen to be a mouse, this will help. But if you're a human, you're on your own, what I'm saying.
Something like that, because what does happen is the first, you know, you get through all those phases and you show that it works in some humans, that knocks out about 92%.
Yeah.
And then a small percentage of the drugs that first appeared to have some positive effect in humans get recalled, and that's what brings you to almost a 96% failure rate. So what we really need to do is restructure the entire system. And there are a lot of people working on that, and there's been progress in Europe. But, you know, we've been trying to bring this to light for a very long time through our work. And while it's very hard to change this long-lasting structure for doing research, we can at least use the USDA website and its reading room to focus on specific studies and activities that are going on now. And that was sort of the wonder of this electronic reading room, that not only were the records available, but they were in a database where you could search on different terms and pull up the information. And, you know, sometimes in a given day, someone might use it 5 to 10 times just to pull up a different record. And all of that was just yanked down on February 3rd. So, you know, we took a look at the situation, we took a look at the law, and we just jumped right into action and sued USDA.
PCRM in action. We're talking with Mark Kennedy, Vice President for Legal Affairs at PCRM. And let's move from research to training right now. I'm sure there was a lot of celebrating in the halls of PCRM when the news came out about how animals are used in medical training. You guys have been up in arms about this for 30 years. What happened?
Well, this is actually hopefully it'll have an end, this battle. But one of our primary campaigns since day one was to stop the use of live animals in medical training for medical students. And one by one, over the years, we campaigned, or we sent letters, or we met with officials, and we got all these medical schools to stop using live animals in the medical training setting. And this was something that, when we started, looked to be almost, an extremely steep uphill battle. But just through persistence and, of course, just sort of common sense, we've shown these institutions that you shouldn't actually train your students on animals. Because, again, it's just like with the drugs. The methods, the physiology of the animal, it doesn't translate to what they're seeing in humans. So that's right. A little while back, we celebrated our final victory in that regard. Yeah, I mean, you know, of course, that we've instantly, not giving up, not stopping, not losing any momentum, we switched our focus from the traditional medical school model to other types of training. So we have pediatrics residency is now one of our primary focuses, and as it has been for years, another area, advanced trauma life support, I think it's called ATLS, is another training area in which there's really no need for using animals to train the methods. If you're going to be in a sort of emergency trauma setting, you really need to know how to find the right parts of the human body, not, say, a dog. So that's another area where we still have some work to do, but there are still programs that are using animals, live animals, in that setting.
Well, speaking of dogs, let's spend a moment down in Mississippi. I understand you've been doing battle concerning hot dogs down there. Maybe you need to explain what's going on with hot dogs in Mississippi.
Absolutely. We have been seeing for years studies by prominent research institutions and even government bodies here in the United States, where it's a little harder, sadly, to advance good nutrition, it seems. Right. But everybody is now recognizing that processed meats are carcinogenic to humans. And there were some studies about 10 years ago, but the most recent one was this announcement by the World Health Organization. And it's pretty unambiguous. I'll just read you a zinger from it if you're willing to humor me. But this was a study in which researchers from all over the world examined 800 studies already existing, and they looked at the cancer-causing properties of red and processed meats. And what they determined was that there is an 18% increased risk of colorectal cancer per 50 grams of processed meats consumed. Ooh. So that just sounded like a whole bunch of jargon there, but what it means, 50 grams is about the size of a small hot dog. So if you are consuming that on a regular basis, you are significantly increasing your cancer risk. And the conclusion was that processed meats are carcinogenic to humans. And what are other things that are carcinogenic to humans? Well, say cigarettes, you know? I mean, so our view is that serving this food to patients in a hospital is pretty similar to serving cigarettes to your patients in a hospital. I mean, it's something you would never do.
And sounds kind of self-serving, if you ask me.
So we have been going to hospitals all across the nation, but in this case, as part of our campaign to celebrate Colorectal Cancer Month, we focused on, it's called the Colon Cancer Corridor, and it's a cluster of 9 states that range from Ohio down to Louisiana. And they're almost in a block.
Right.
And they are the states in the United States with the highest death rates for colorectal cancer. And we just wrote to these hospitals and we said, look, at the very least, stop serving hot dogs on your menus.
Right.
And this isn't about anything other than common sense. If you wouldn't serve your patient a plate of cigarettes, you shouldn't be serving a plate of cancer-causing hot dogs. Anyway, hot dogs, of course, are seen as this classic American dish, but they just shouldn't be in the hospitals. And one hospital down in Mississippi, the University of Mississippi Medical Center, which houses 4 hospitals in its campus, just said, you know what, you're right, and yanked the hot dogs off almost immediately. So we started that campaign in February, and within a few weeks, we had a letter from the University of Mississippi saying, yep, we're out. No more hot dogs.
Wow, very good.
It's a small victory, I guess. Mm. But it'll save lives.
And that's the whole idea behind the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, listener, if you've ever gone on a train trip on Amtrak, PCRM has been there. So let's find out how on our return when we talk with Mark Kennedy, Vice President for Legal Affairs at PCRM, on our return. So stay right where you are.
I'm Dr. James Markham with your Biblical Prescription for Life. A question came into our website. I need something to help with chronic pain. Any suggestions? Well, today's Biblical Prescription for Life is found in Psalms 100, verses 2, where it says, "Serve the Lord with gladness, come before his presence with singing. In scientific studies, it's been shown music, especially classical music like Bach, Mozart, Gregorian chants, that's been shown to have many health benefits. In fact, in 2009, an article in Circulation shows that music increases oxytocin levels, and it increases the chemistry of relaxation, decreases the stress chemistry, especially cortisol. So our biblical prescription today to help with chronic pain is listen to some music. Try some Mozart or even some praise music to help your pain. For more information, go to heartwiseministries.org.
Before we get back to our guest, I want to invite you to interact with Heartwise Ministries. Perhaps you have a question or comment to share. Is there a topic you'd like for us to discuss on this program? Have we helped you in some way with the information or resources we've made available to you each week? If you're a computer person, you're in luck. You can visit the heartwiseministries.org website and leave a message in the contact section. Or you can click on over to Facebook and join our family by liking Heartwise Ministries. Here you can enter your thoughts and suggestions, enjoy Dr. Markham's latest video blogs, and learn more about the many activities of this global outreach. A lot of exciting things happening at Heartwise. Of course, you can call us as well. Here's our phone number for non-medical queries and comments, 423-238-0048. That's 423-238-0048. We're here to serve you. Please feel free to use any of these avenues to communicate with us. Welcome back to the program. I'm your host, Charles Mills. Our guest today, Mark Kennedy, Vice President for Legal Affairs at the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine in Washington, D.C. We're talking about health and how PCRM sometimes needs to use the law to bring about needed changes in this country and in our lives and in our area. And let's talk Amtrak for a minute here, Mark. This government-run rail service for the traveling public has raised a few flags at PCRM. Tell us what happened and what you're doing about it.
Again, this is part of our Colon Cancer Awareness Month effort. We've lately been looking at hospitals, but another setting in which you have a lot of people who are effectively a captive audience is, of course, mass transit.
Sure.
And we were looking at Amtrak, and our focus on that was in part because it's a very common means of transportation, especially here on the East Coast, but also because it's partially government-funded. And as it happens, there was this recent law passed by Congress that's called the Fixing America's Surface Transportation Act. And that is FAST Act, for short. And one of the sections of the FAST Act was called Food and Beverage Reform. And, you know, in all honesty, the law is focused on sort of the fiscal actions of Amtrak, but it included a line requiring Amtrak to develop and begin implementing a plan to eliminate the operating losses associated with providing food and beverage service on board Amtrak trains. And so we took a look at that language, and it seemed like a perfect opportunity while Amtrak is doing this product development to really take another look at what it's serving its passengers. And what you'd find if you went to the Amtrak website is that most of the Amtrak lines have their own menus that are sort of tailored to either, you know, something historical or regional to that line. But one thing pretty much all the lines have in common is a processed meat somewhere on the menu. And again, given the statistics, we just thought, look, why should taxpayer dollars be funding this large transportation service in a way that is harming the passengers? You know, it's bizarre, but you are more likely really to get cancer than you are to get in a train accident.
Yes.
And so we just said, look, here's another way to protect the safety of your passengers. Why don't you, while you're considering product development and looking at your operations, just drop the processed meats from your menus? And that's along the lines of what we've been doing in hospitals. You know, you and I were just talking about the hazardous hot dogs campaign, as we call it. But we've also been looking at processed meats in general being on hospital menus, not just hot dogs. Hot dogs make for an easy sort of mascot food to draw, but there's so much more. I mean, why are hospitals, why is Amtrak, why are all these other public institutions serving bacon, sausage, and other things that are known to contribute to your colon cancer risk? And so with all of that in mind, we submitted a petition March 1st to Amtrak's president and CEO.
Do you think that with the information so available in the world today that places like Amtrak and these hospitals are responding because the evidence is overwhelming? Is it, in other words, could you have done this 15, 20 years ago, or is the world different and you're able to do it now?
I, of course, come at this from a legal standpoint, right. But I can tell you that when preparing our petitions and our legal briefs when we're in a lawsuit, we cite all of the relevant study. And I have one in front of me now, and it's interesting what you said, because a lot of it starts to come about in the late 90s and then starts to pick up steam 2007, 2010, yes. 2011, 2012, 2015. And so what we're seeing, I think, in the science is this steady and accelerating march towards this conclusion that processed meats are carcinogenic. And as the mainstream public hears this more and more from reputable sources doing peer-reviewed studies, mm-hmm. we're developing and seeing an awareness across the board. Now, it's slow, but you know, you got to think back 50 years to when people were starting to hear for the first time that smoking was bad for them.
Right.
And it's really, surprisingly, a very similar concept. You know, it, with cigarettes, some of these companies tried for years to maybe knock out a single chemical or a single part of the smoking process to reduce cancer risk, and it doesn't work like that. For whatever reason, smoking tobacco is kind of a package deal that raises your cancer risk, and it's the same thing with processed meats. There's a whole variety of factors that go into it, and sometimes people will say, oh, well, my food doesn't have nitrites or nitrates or high sodium levels, but there's really a whole, literally a process, I mean, it's called processed meat, that goes into creating these types of food products, and there's something in there as a whole
yes.
that raises your cancer risk. So people are starting to get that. You know, of course, nobody wants to give up their bacon or their hot dogs, but at some point you have to start thinking not only about yourself, but about children or patients in hospitals or other people. Schools shouldn't be serving this stuff. Hospitals shouldn't be serving this stuff. No one really should. You know, you need to establish good eating patterns early on in life, or we're just going to keep adding to these huge health problems that we see nationwide, just trends towards obesity and diabetes and cancer and things that just really could be prevented.
Mark Kennedy, Vice President for Legal Affairs at PCRM. Mark, thank you very much. The website, pcrm.org, lots of information there, and also some things that you can do, listener, yourself, to start on the road to health using information that they make available there. That's pcrm.org. Mark, thank you very much. Appreciate your words of wisdom and guidance.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
And listener, until next time, this is Charles Mills, along with Mark Kennedy, inviting you to remain heartwise. Goodbye, everyone. Thank you for joining us today on HeartWise. If you'd like more information on how to build and maintain optimum physical, mental, and spiritual health, log on to heartwiseministries.org. HeartWise is a listener-supported program, and your partnership with us would be greatly appreciated. Once again, our web address is heartwiseministries.org.